The next case is 08-2230, City of Cleveland versus Destiny Ventures.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, my name is Michael Poklar. I represent the appellant, Destiny Ventures. The question here is whether the City of Cleveland can apply an Ohio statute in such a way that eviscerates a corporation's constitutional rights under the Sixth Amendment in the Ohio Article 1, Section 10 of the Ohio Constitution, the right to counsel, the right to confrontation, the right to be present at all phases of trial. Certainly in this instance, these rights certainly are not absolute. They can be waived and they can be forfeited. Certainly in this instance, neither of which applied to the corporation Destiny Ventures. There was never clear waiver, open, knowingly made of their rights, and there certainly was not a forfeiture of the rights. There was never a trial to begin. They never absconded. They never waived their rights to be present in this situation. Excuse me. In this situation, Destiny Ventures, the City of Cleveland, determined that this statute applied. They went forward with a trial in absentia and deprived this corporation of its constitutional rights. We believe that the city misused this particular statute in such a way as to deprive them of these rights. I think clearly case law, federal rules of criminal procedure, Ohio rules of criminal procedure clearly set forth instances in which these rights can be waived. I think it's clear that once a trial has begun, the rights cannot be waived. In this situation, a trial had never begun.
Counsel, it seems as though the Court of Appeals looked at the statute 2941-47 and stated that since there was an appearance, or once a plea is entered, the corporation is deemed to have notice and be informed of proceedings, even including trial. So would you comment on that, please?
Well, I think there's two separate issues there, and I do believe that the issue regarding the statutory situation will be addressed in the Washington Mutual case versus what we are addressing this statute as applied to our specific corporation. But that raises the question of what does before the court mean? There's some evidence that the corporation missed an arraignment. They were sent a notice. There's question as to whether or not they had actually received that notice. But nonetheless, they were the statute, in my opinion, was misapplied in this instance. I think the plain language of that statute makes it clear that it's applicable in situations under an indictment, under an information. And certainly, by the plain language of that statute, the clerk of common pleas can come in and enter a plea. In this situation, none of that occurred. A clerk did appear, but this certainly wasn't a situation where Destiny was indicted or an information. A complaint had been filed. Certainly, it's not a situation where the court of common pleas would be the proper party, the proper clerk, to enter a plea on behalf of a corporate defendant in a Cleveland housing court, municipal housing court situation.
Counsel, would it be your contention that these cases, if it's constitutionally permissible to convict a corporate a defendant in absentia, that this has to be done in common pleas court?
No, I don't believe so. That would not be my. But in this particular instance, the statute that was used would appear to to hold that.
And I mean under this statute, this
yes.
requires a trial in common pleas court.
It would appear that the proper party to enter a plea in this situation would be the clerk of common pleas court in this situation.
We have two different decisions of the 8th District Court of Appeals in this case and in Washington. Was there an en banc request?
No, there was not. It was baffling to this counsel as to the result of that, because we were in basically on that issue, and the Court of Appeals clearly found against Destiny, and some 3 months later they found that statute was not appropriate in a Washington Mutual, and it was appropriate in a Destiny Ventures case.
The constitutional issue was not raised in the court until you got here, isn't that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Has it been waived?
No, Your Honor.
It seems to me your argument is that the statute's unconstitutional as applied.
Correct.
Not on its face. Why is there not an abuse of discretion issue here? The trial court made a decision with respect to the fact that counsel, the company sent somebody who was not a lawyer to say we were trying to find a lawyer. I mean, you knew about the company, apparently they knew about this hearing, they knew they needed a lawyer. Why is it not an abuse of discretion case?
Well, I think the facts in this situation take it out of that. The facts really are that this corporation had retained an attorney that had appeared previously in the housing court in the city of Cleveland. It's not of record, but I have obtained billing records, and on the particular day of the arraignment, December 6th, the prior counsel was in conference with the city of Cleveland in another matter. The city knew that they were represented. Whatever happened on that particular day, the January 14th day of trial, nobody really clearly knows. However, counsel called the client on the Friday prior to the hearing, advised him that because of a conflict, and the conflict situation is unclear, counsel never filed a motion to withdraw. Nothing was done. I received a call the morning of trial asking me if I would represent this company. The judge in the matter called me. The prosecutor in the matter called me, asked me if I had been retained yet. I said I had not. They decided with all that information to go forward. I think based upon that, it's clearly a constitutional issue, as that statute was applied, knowing all the facts behind it, what had occurred, what was happening, what was going on. It would have been a much better result had the court granted even a day continuance to allow other counsel to appear.
Is this still going on in the housing court in Cleveland?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And are they following the Washington case or the Destiny case, or what is the trial judge doing?
Currently they are not moving forward with trials in absentia, pending the result of these two matters.
Thank you.
But because of the facts, because of the extraordinary circumstances of a corporation going as far as they did to try and obtain a continuance, to let the court know, to send somebody in, they knew that this particular property manager wasn't the proper party to represent the company, but at least to request this. And yet, with all this knowledge, with the court calling me twice, they still proceeded in absentia. When Destiny Ventures had defenses to this particular case.
So the position of your client is that it is all right to use this process. It just, the court abused its discretion in the way it dealt with your client.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, to use the process?
The trial in absentia.
It's my opinion that the whole trial in absentia is unconstitutional. I think it is clear, as I said before, that obviously you can waive, you can forfeit these rights. In a situation like this with a corporation, you know, perhaps there's another method, another tier, another way that we could prevent this from happening. And I'm not clear on it. Certainly, we're here looking for the court to give us some guidance, but perhaps
I'm assuming this is in the mix as to this is one of the tools available for dealing with housing that people have just walked away from and owners are difficult or impossible to find. Your client was reachable. I mean, they knew how to reach them.
Correct.
But they have, I assume,
right,
hundreds of properties, which that becomes problematic.
Well, it's you can't confuse this situation. Certainly, the foreclosure issue is terrible in all cities in the country. But it's really, what rights does a corporation have? And just because it's a corporation, do we just ignore their constitutional rights? And especially in this, and I started saying, is there another method? I think in this situation, easily, you could have held a hearing. You could have said, why aren't they here? Is it excusable? Are they, in fact, just thumbing their nose at the court, which in this case they certainly were not? This particular corporation went out of its way to make an appearance when they knew that their counsel was not going to be there. So I think it's a clear distinction, and there should be. I mean, and what constitutes that? Is a corporation that appears and their conduct is so egregious that they do in effect thumb their nose at the court? But where do we reach that? Where do we reach that point as to take away the rights to be present, to have counsel, and to confrontation?
What is your response to the Attorney General's argument in the amicus brief that corporations have fewer or diminished Sixth Amendment rights because you can't put a corporation in jail, and a corporation, it's easier for a corporation to not appear when they've been summoned to appear. They may be fined. But what's your response to that policy argument about the statute?
Well, I disagree with that. I still think the Sixth Amendment rights apply to an accused, and a corporation that's a defendant in an action is an accused. I think they have the right to be present. I think they have the right to be present in all phases of the trial. I believe they have the right to counsel and the right to confrontation. Certainly, there's some argument that it's different. It's not subject to, but the corporation in this instance has assets. It certainly isn't accused. It certainly should be given the right to present a defense. And in our particular matter, it did have a defense in this particular case. And I think in many of the cases in the housing court previously, corporations had defenses. But the use of the trial in absentia has gone on, and corporations' rights are clearly trampled. I'd like to reserve, I forgot to, for a rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Kokar. Ms. Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices. My name is Karen Lynn, and I'm representing the City of Cleveland in this matter. May it please the Court. There are two distinct issues that I would like to focus on with respect to this argument. First of all, the constitutional issue and whether there was a waiver. Without going into at this point whether or not the corporation does have a Sixth Amendment right to confrontation or to presence or right to an attorney, in this instance, there are several distinct facts that mitigate or weigh in favor of finding that Destiny Ventures did waive any constitutional rights that may have attached to them with respect to this hearing. To be clear, Destiny Ventures had an arraignment before it was ever scheduled for the corporate docket. That's the way Judge Pianca had the trial in absentia docket set up. He would initially have an arraignment on the regular docket, which is scheduled Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. If a defendant failed to appear after being duly served, he would then schedule it for the corporate docket. Prior to actually having the trial, he would send notice to the defendant indicating, A, you are set for a trial on this date. If you fail to appear, we will proceed to trial against you, and you may be found guilty, and there may be penalties associated with that.
So, now, let me interrupt you there. In that process, could you use the same process with a person, a human being?
No, Your Honor.
That person would not be able to be convicted in absentia if they didn't show, correct?
Your Honor, there's a period of time prior to Crosby, Diaz, and some of the more statutory things that have come for an individual, but where you might have made that argument. I think Cuoco, one of the cases I cited, was sort of in the mix of that, and they did actually do that with an individual. But I think the case law as it stands now does indicate that you could not do that to an individual. An individual has a right to be present and can only be tried in absentia if they abscond after the fact or if they actually waive it in open court.
Correct. And you're maintaining that those rights do not adhere to a corporation status.
That's correct, Your Honor. I did submit some additional authority with respect to that. The U.S. Supreme Court, some of the federal district courts that have looked at that issue have indicated that when it comes to a corporation, constitutional rights do not go one for one from an individual to a corporation. There are factors that must be considered. And I'm sorry, Your Honor, would you?
Is there a specific case that says that the corporation has different Sixth Amendment rights than an individual?
I could not find anything specifically when it comes to the confrontational right. I did find that there was case law that suggested a corporation does have a right to counsel, yes, but not with respect to the right to be present. The case law I did find, though, indicated that the rights that are attributable to that are not attributable to a corporation are rights that tend to be purely personal, rights that are historically and through time devised to address things that are uniquely applicable to an individual. Looking at the case law, there was a discussion in one of the cases with respect to the right to confrontation, particularly where it was clear that particular right, the right to confrontation, was based on the idea that an individual has a right to be present because the jury has a right, or they should have the right to see this person, to see their plight, to see them, to see what they're facing. And I think the actual quote was something along the lines of, they should have the ability to see the sad countenance of this person and weigh that factor in when determining whether or not this person is guilty or innocent of the thing charged. That specific concern, that is never faced by a corporation. A corporation is never required to be personally present. In fact, could not really be personally present in a hearing before a court. At most, you're going to have an attorney. You may have a president or CEO present. But the idea of it, the idea of thinking about someone going to jail, and those factors are not the things that are going to be contemplated when you're thinking of a corporation. I'm sorry.
I'm not unsympathetic to the Attorney General's arguments that there is a huge absentee landlord issue, especially with the foreclosures and the buying and flipping of properties. But aren't there a whole host of civil tools available with foreclosures and default? I mean, you can easily get defaults if they don't show. There's no constitutional issue as long as there's been service. And you can levy all sorts of fines in the civil field. Why don't we use those tools instead of invading basic Sixth Amendment rights for an accused?
Well, Your Honor, I don't necessarily agree that they have the Sixth Amendment right to be to confrontation in this instance, and I do think that even if you want to argue that they do have that right, I would argue that they waived it in this case by virtue
what,
of
what rights does a corporation have as an accused, in your opinion?
As an accused, I think they have a right to due process. They have a right to notice an opportunity to be heard. In this instance, and in this specific case, going to the specific facts of this case, not generally the corporation docket, there was an arraignment where they were notified they failed to appear. They had notification of the corporate docket. According to them, they had an attorney retained as of the Friday before trial, and yet there was no notice of appearance, no motion to continue, nothing filed by this person. They apparently contacted the defendant the Friday before and indicated, I cannot try this case. There's no reason why a motion to continue couldn't have been filed. Judge Pianca has always granted those requests.
And apparently the judge and the prosecutor and everybody talked to the gentleman that's now representing them. Why, for the same reason, couldn't the judge have just granted a continuance to give him fair due process? You talk about due process. It sure sounds like there wasn't due process here when the judge personally was aware that they were scrambling trying to get an attorney when they withdrew at the last minute.
Your Honor, without I'm going to go here because the defense did bring up some issues that were not on the record, but this was not Destiny Ventures' first case. They were very aware of this procedure. They had actually been found guilty previously. They knew the consequences. They knew they needed to have someone present. That phone call with respect to Destiny Ventures, Mr. Poklar indicated, and to the prosecutor and to the judge, that he had not been retained at that point. There's never been an explanation as to why the attorney who was hired previously was not able to file a motion to continue the Friday before when he knew he had to withdraw.
There was a representative from the company there. Not an attorney, but a representative from the company there.
He actually was not he did not work for Destiny Ventures, Your Honor. He was actually a gentleman who saw an opportunity. Destiny Ventures had been in the news a lot in Cleveland. He contacted them and said, hey, I'm in Cleveland. I can manage your properties for you. So he did not actually work for Destiny Ventures. He was more in the line of a maintenance, someone who had a maintenance company who was trying to maintain their properties because they did have a significant amount of property in Cleveland at one time. So I would say he was not an appropriate party for this purpose. And I think Judge Pianca had had at that time numerous cases, numerous corporations before the court, before he even went to utilizing this statute.
Counsel, you just referred to the statute, and the statute talks about the clerk of common pleas. This is housing court, which I understand is a division of municipal court. Was it actually the clerk of court of common pleas that entered the plea?
No, Your Honor. It was the clerk of court for the municipal court.
Okay. So there was not complete following of the statute.
No, Your Honor. But I would argue, and we do go into a little bit more detail with this in the Washington Mutual case, but 294135 clearly states that any laws with respect to service that apply to an indictment or information applies to an affidavit, actually, is the phrasing. An affidavit that is used to file a case that has original jurisdiction in muni court. So my argument, I mean, Washington Mutual, my argument here would be that statute gave this court authorization to use that statute in muni court.
Although in criminal cases, we view statutes in a way that is most beneficial to the criminal accused, even if that accused is a corporation.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with that in the sense that I believe that that's more for the actual offenses. I think 290104B applies when it comes to the procedural, which is, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a liberal construction, but it does say that the procedural statutes should be construed in such a way as to meet justice. And in this situation, I would argue that based on the fact that the corporation cannot be arrested, cannot be forced into the court by any means,
but can be fined $140,000 without the ability to defend.
Your Honor, they did have the ability to defend, though, I would argue. They had notice. They had an opportunity to be heard. They chose not to appear. And the reality of the situation is that, you know, again, this was not their first case. It wasn't as if they did not know the consequences of their choice not to be there.
Counsel, what are the consequences other than their fined? This $140,000,
yes, Your Honor.
For this property, then what happens?
Well, typically what Judge Pianca will do is he'll put the fine into civil judgment, and the collection attorneys begin to try and find the assets to support the fine.
I'm presuming the house isn't one of the assets they're looking at?
No. Usually, in fact, I believe this house has been torn down.
I don't want to take you back. I think you were talking about the waiver of the constitutional law issue. I'd like to hear your explanation. I don't think you were complete. Were you incomplete? I don't believe.
Let me go back, Your Honor. Thank you. With respect to the waiver argument, Your Honor, it's clear in the case law that an individual can waive their right to be present, waive the right to confrontation, waive their right to an attorney. Those are rights that an individual can do. The question that I think needs to be answered is, how does a waiver of a corporation's right to confrontation and presence attorney appear? How does it manifest itself?
Okay, I thought you were going to talk about the issue the question I asked Mr. Poklar at the threshold question. Have they waived the issue here, having not raised the constitutional law issue below?
Your Honor, with respect to, they did raise the Sixth Amendment issue below. They did not raise the distinct issue about whether or not it was constitutional as applied. So as far as that's concerned, I would say they did waive that argument. They brought that up for the first time in their brief to this court. So I would agree with you there. They did waive that.
So they raised the unconstitutional on its face. argument.
Yes. They raised the Sixth Amendment issue, but they did not raise the as-applied argument. And just to briefly discuss that issue, they did argue for strict scrutiny. I don't believe a fundamental right is at issue here. If the court's inclined to consider that, I believe it would be a rational basis analysis, and I believe the housing court had a rational basis for its procedure in this case, given.
Was there anything in the record, you referred to the fact that Destiny knew they've been through this before, they knew the procedure, they knew the consequences. Is there anything in the record that indicates that the judge may have been concerned about a pattern by Destiny of putting off the final decisions by doing what they did here?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. Let me make sure I understand your question. You want to know whether or not the judge in his decision had...
Is there anything in the record that from which we could conclude, I assume you would erase it if we could, that the judge... This has somewhat the appearance of the judge. This is housing court. A lot of cases, defendants are frequently, I would guess, in the same defendants are in the court. And was the judge at a point where he was fed up with delay by the defendant in these types of cases?
Your Honor. I think he did write an entry in response to Destiny Ventures' motion to judgment. I think it was a 60B motion that they filed, but he wrote a lengthy entry indicating, I think, some of his frustration came through in that with the history of the cases before the court. But definitely, I think Judge Pianca was trying to address a problem that he had with corporate defendants. I think by the time we had had that hearing, he had had the in absentia docket going for about a year, and we had a number of no-shows, a number of corporate defendants who had come in at that time and failed to appear. And I think his use of 2941.47 was a response to the fact that he had had numerous corporate defendants who had not acceded to the jurisdiction of the housing court.
There's another question that's raised in the brief, a factual issue, and that is that Destiny Ventures did not own the property no longer owned the property, did own it, got rid of it at the time the housing person observed and filed the complaint. And I'm assuming that was raised in the 60B motion, although I'm not entirely sure, and apparently didn't gain any traction, although it would seem that would be a pretty easy thing to show.
Well, the reality of, Your Honor, is that, and this is what we're seeing with a lot of these cases, but in this specific case, they claimed that they had sold it, but no deed had ever been filed showing transfer. So even as of the date of the trial, Destiny Ventures was still the record owner. As of the date of the appeal, Destiny Ventures was the record owner. And as of the date of the first oral argument, they were the record owner. So they provided a deed to us at that point saying, hey, we no longer own the property. But, you know, it's one of those situations where our housing court process is administrative. There's an entire procedure that you go through before you even get to criminal court where we send you notice and you're given an opportunity to correct the violation. And at that time, if they knew they didn't own it, all they had to do was contact the inspector and indicate, hey, we don't own it. This is the person who, you know, has responsibility of the property at that time. So the inspector, and I think she testified to this below, had no contact from Destiny Ventures.
What was the basis of the $140,000 judgment in this case?
It was in part the length of time that the property had been in violation of the code. It's usual, the fine is based on $5,000 per day.
Did you say the property had been raised?
It has been raised now.
Oh.
At the time that we went to court, it was still standing and there were
So existing violations and fines accruing at did you say $5,000 a day?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that accrued to $140,000.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think $140,000 was half of the max. I think, if I recall, the actual max fine would have been
$280,000. I see.
I see my time is almost up, so I think I will exceed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Lynn. Mr. Pokar, you've saved just a little less than 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Clarify, Destiny Ventures has done business in Cleveland since probably 1998. They're not a mortgage company, not a seller, not a renter. They take properties that have been foreclosed from banks and process them, sell them in bulk to people that would renovate, remodel, do whatever. This particular home in question was in deplorable condition when they received it. It probably should never have been sold or mortgaged, but that's Destiny's, that's their business model. This particular, in this particular situation, Destiny had retained an attorney. They had appeared in court. They settled a couple of other cases. They were in a process. They had assumed, and correctly, I would think, that this attorney would appear in court and handle this particular situation. As I said, they did not find out until Friday. This particular attorney was a part-time practitioner who worked for a key bank, and it's not part of the record, but there was some pressure applied to this gentleman to resign, and it happened so quickly that he never did file a motion. It's correct, he never did. I think in this situation, the bottom line is that I believe Judge Calabrese, who dissented in the 8th District, he's the one that got it right when he stated that the majority's interpretation goes against well-established constitutional principles, rules of criminal procedure and case law, that an accused has the right to be present at all critical stages of a criminal proceeding when the defendant's absence would adversely affect the fairness of that proceeding. I think Judge Calabrese got it right in this situation.
Well, counsel, at the fairness of the proceedings, you said, I think, initially that there were defenses to this.
Yes, there were defenses.
Well, you just said that
one of
the defenses was in a deplorable condition.
One of the defenses, Your Honor, is what you had raised previously. The house had been sold. It is Destiny's business model. They take them from a particular mortgage broker, whomever that may be, package them and sell them. This particular property was amongst, I believe, a package of 22 other homes that had been sold. They received and sold for, I believe, $700 in this particular matter to a rehab company out of Ohio. They had sold it. They have the purchase agreement, and they have the transfer of money and the preparation of the deed that was sent to this company. They had sold the property probably 2 years, at least a year and a half prior to its being inspected. And another
but
quick note.
Their practice not to record the deeds then?
So they weren't the owner at the time of the inspection even?
They were not the owner. They were not the owner. They had sold that property and sent the deed out. They received the money for that particular property, sent the deed out.
Had the deed been recorded?
The deed was recorded.
It was recorded.
No, it was not recorded, but it had been sold and they had sent a deed.
If we rule in your favor, then does that not encourage corporations to not appear at all? I mean, that stops the process then, correct?
Well, I don't think so. I think what I was asking, I think there needs to be another stage. I think there needs to be another step in a situation with a corporation. Is there a combination? There's something so that is so egregious that it comports to a forfeiture and a waiver in a corporate situation. Is there in a situation like this when they didn't appear? Could there be a hearing? Should there be a hearing to see why they didn't appear? If no good reason's forthcoming, I'd have no problem then determining that then would be a waiver of their rights. But given the fact that everything they did to try and be at that hearing, I think that's when their rights were just trampled. And just quickly, counsel for the city said, this was a history of corporations not appearing, and I think Judge Pianca took everything out on a company that he knew had assets that did appear and that had previously been there. So it was not that Destiny Ventures had thumbed their nose and hadn't appeared. They were in that court numerous times.
Mrs. Cupta, do you have a question? Thank you, Mr. Pocar. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Take a brief recess.